Hi, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Pretty good, Scott. UC's 1-1, but I personally am feeling pretty good about the team and the program, despite the loss on Saturday. I know going into the Michigan game, they, of course, lost 36-14. What are your thoughts on the team and the program? I know you had some concerns after Austin Peay, more so than I did. Did those kind of change with Michigan, or are you kind of more dug in now than ever before on some of those standpoints?
Well, it's interesting, because it seemed like the general consensus around the fan base was more people were kind of like on board after Michigan, even though UC ended up losing by 20 points. Like, as the week has gone on, like, the offensive performance really does stand out. It's like, the offense has just been so bad, and the line is not good. And it really affects everything they do. Like, to the point where I think as good as the defense looked against Michigan, like, the offense just looked that bad. And really, like, the defense didn't, like, the overall numbers weren't, like, as great as they ended up seeming. So, yeah, I think, like, while it was, like, good to be positive about the Michigan game, like, it did end up getting away from them. And they still have some pretty big problems. They don't look a ton better than they did last year. But what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that camp that I'm more encouraged about this team after Michigan. When you're down, 17-14 to the eighth best team in the country, and I think the number two best defense in the country, I mean, that's really encouraging. It really wasn't until the fourth quarter where, Michigan really started to pile on points. Another Hayden Moore pick six. They had, the big runs the defense eventually just gave one of those big runs. They hung with them. They hung with Michigan. They weren't overly shocked by the big house. Michigan didn't come out Michigan came out and just swamped them in the first few series. I mean, the touchdown and the pick six by Hayden Moore, they're down 14-0 before they barely had a chance to, get their feet wet. But they were resilient. They hung in there. They clawed back. They almost took a lead if Hayden Moore could hit a wide-open Khalil Lewis streaking down the middle of the field. You're right, the offense still has issues, but, we kind of knew the offense had issues going into this game. We knew that this was going to be, I think both of us kind of predicted, 42-7, a loss, obviously, a 42-7 loss, 42-14 loss, somewhere in there. We didn't think the offense was going to put that up that many points. But they were okay. There was a lot of bright spots. The front seven is going to be a massive, massive point of positivity of the season. They're going to carry the team in many ways. The secondary looked ferocious out there. They weren't just hitting opposing Michigan receivers. They were, throwing them to the ground. There was an attitude about them that I haven't seen in, Haruki Nakamura or Aaron Webster's time. It's been a while. Jared Doakes looked really good. Hopefully we see more of him this Saturday. The offense in general, just a big, big weight on this team. And I don't know if they're going to overcome it many times this season, but they're a work in progress.
Yeah, definitely. And I just think they're in this kind of the same position where, things are going to play out like the Michigan game did, where, the defense can keep you in the game for three quarters, and then it's kind of fall apart, and some of their numbers will look kind of generic. The defense looked great. I'm not going to take anything away from that. Then, at the end of the day, they still gave up, 5 yards of rush and, 8 yards of play, or 6 yards of play, and that's not really, great. Especially when your offense is averaging under 3 yards of play. And 3 yards an attempt passing. Like, the passing game is so far, like, below any expectations for a number of reasons. Like, to put it on the receivers, like, nobody's really stepped up. Like, your leading receiver in terms of receptions against Michigan was Mike Boone, and Khalil Lewis had 29, or at 29 yards, Devin Gray had 41 yards. Like, it, just, like, really nothing from the receivers. And, like, yeah, like, they did have the big overthrow on the Lewis play. And, like, somebody ran a wrong route, which, like, negated another, a potential another big play on that drive. It's like, they left a lot on the field. And in what was a close game for a time. So, like, that's just really frustrating. And 4 sacks against your quarterback is...
The offense is just so out of sync in so many ways. I mean, if Hayden Moore has time in the pocket, which is rare, he's overthrowing receivers. If he hits a receiver, the receiver drops it. Like Khalil Lewis, he was overthrown on one pass in the third quarter, but there was a fourth quarter long pass that if he catches it, he strolls into the end zone for a touchdown. If Hayden Moore even has a couple of seconds to throw, he's, you know, either honing in on one receiver and nearly getting picked off. He's throwing pick sixes. And then that's not even counting all the times that he's facing pressure right off the snap. I mean, how many times on Saturday was a free rusher being allowed to just wallop him in the backfield? It just, the offense just has so many issues right now. And, I mean, it's just going to be the burden that this team's going to have to bear throughout the season. They're not going to win games 42-30. They're not going to win games probably even like 30-24. If they're going to win any games this season, it's going to be like under 30, and it's going to be like a close game. That being said, like I said, there's a lot of bright spots. Like Jared Doakes looks to be the running back of the future. Mike Boone looked good in what performances he did have. The receivers were getting open. Hayden Moore was just having trouble getting in the ball. The receivers themselves need to frickin' stay after practice at least a couple of hours and just work on hands drills. I don't know what to do with the offensive line. Just get more talent in there. I don't know. And there's a lot more negatives on the offense to really talk about than the positives. But, I mean, if we're looking like long-term, there's a few good areas of positivity we can look at.
Yeah, the drops, you negated to mention that before. The drops killed them.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like it doesn't show up in the box score, at least the box score I'm looking at. But like they dropped at least like 7 or 8 passes.
Mm-hmm.
And just like total drive killers. And again, and really, like this offense can't afford any drive killers.
Right, and that's the thing is like it's if Hayden Moore is stepping up in the pocket and throwing a laser over the middle of the field, it's really a coin flip whether or not the receiver's actually going to catch the ball if it hits him in the hands. Like Khalil Lewis dropped a sure touchdown this week against Austin Peay on a slant. He dropped a pass that hit off his fingers. It's just everything's just so out of sync with the offense right now. Everyone really, the offensive line, the running backs, Hayden Moore, the receivers, they all kind of share their blame. And there's not really anything you can really say about it other than the fact that just everyone just needs to play better. That's all it is.
Yeah, and I think you can just go up and down. Like, everything on offense needs to be better. And, like, that does include the play calling. Because, man, we saw some weird plays in this game. Like, I don't really understand why Mike Boone only had, let's see, like 17 touches. That was a game where he needed a lot more touches. Like he was like effective on the ground, like 3.7 yards a carry, but he never went backwards. And it seemed like every time like he touched the ball, like something positive happened, and like they would just go away from him for such a long time.
Yeah, and that again goes back to kind of the question we had about Denbrock, you know, last week against Austin Peay. Why wasn't Mike Boone being fed the ball right out of the gate. I mean, he goes with passing plays out of the gate, and all of a sudden, Hayden Moore, not surprisingly at all, throws a pick six, and they're down 14-0, like, what, 7 minutes into the game? It's just questionable. And then at the same time, I see Den Brock, you know, rolling in, you know, seeing a lot of that pressure and adjusting and throwing tunnel screens. And those are the plays that are getting UC, you know, 10, 20, 30 yards a clip. And, you know, there's, again, positivity there. But then it's like Mike Boone becomes a ghost for 10 minutes at a time. It's weird. It's just the whole offense, from play calling to just individual performances. Everything is just so out of whack right now.
Yeah, and like I think I don't know how much you can blame on just like the offensive line, but it just definitely deserves a lot of like the finger pointing.
I mean, it all starts there, right? And unfortunately, I mean, Tuberville didn't recruit the offensive line that well because he completely neglected to even go into the homes of players in the Midwest, where most teams in this country get their offensive linemen. And that's why you're seeing ex walk-ons as the starting, as the pieces of the starting offensive line right now, just because there's just not enough warm bodies. So I don't know. This is going to be the crutch that this team's going to have to bear for the rest of the season, and it's going to rely on defense. And from what I saw from the defense on Saturday, pretty impressive. The Cortez Broughton is going to be a hoss in the middle of that line. Kimoni Fitz has a couple of good plays. He was busting through a few times. Perry Young was, if he wasn't in the backfield, he was defending passes in the end zone. There's a lot of good pieces on that front seven that really look to be, you know, the mainstay for the team this season. I don't think we're going to get to points where, like, UC is going to get blown out by, like, hell, even like a Temple team, a Temple caliber team. I don't think, you know, they're going to go into the end of the season and they're going to be, like, you know, down 20-0 at halftime. I don't think they're going to be down, or they're going to lose games, you know, by 30 points against the AAC. I think they're going to be either close wins, close losses, and that's kind of what we expected going into this year, and I can live with that. Because, I mean, close wins or close losses means that, you know, the ball was either bouncing your way a couple of times, you got a couple of bad penalties, or the ball bounced your way, and you had penalties go your direction, and you won a game by a touchdown because of some of those wonky things that happened during games. And that's just what we're going to live with this year until the offense finally comes into its own, hopefully next season.
Yeah, which is, like, I guess, like, good in a way. So at least we know the defense should be consistent. At the same time, it just makes for another, like, really frustrating season. Where it seems like they have a solid defense and it's kind of just wasted on a team that's, like, half a team. It's like, their defensive numbers are pretty great this year. Like, their offense is one of the worst in the nation.
Which, but that's the thing, is like, even if you're looking at some of the defensive stars, like Perry Young, he's a sophomore. Cortez Broughton, I think he's a senior. I don't know if he's a senior yet. He is a junior. Kimoni Fitz, who had a good game last week, he's a junior. I mean, these are guys that aren't going to be leaving this team next season. I mean, they're going to be around probably for next year. And then hopefully you bring the offensive unit up to that caliber next year, and then you have two solid units growing into the 2019 season. I don't see, like, the defense as, like, a waste this year. I think of it as a strong unit that's only going to keep getting better through the Fickell era.
Wait, that could definitely be the case. Like, I just mean, like, the season as a whole. Like, it just doesn't seem like their work is going to result in a ton of wins.
Oh, but that's fine. But we kind of, like, what did we say before at the end of the year, right? It was like, they might win 6 or 7 games, which is appropriate. Like, has that changed in your mind after game two?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting to the point where I don't think they're going to make a bowl game. I think the offense...
Oh, no, no kidding.
I think the offense is that bad.
Yikes. So what do you have them at? Not to jump ahead or anything.
It's kind of looking like a 4-win team again.
Really? Don't go that route. Don't be that guy. Oh, we're gonna have to address this later on when we go through the AAC, but okay. We're gonna put a pin in that.
Well, outside of like your UConns and your East Carolinas, it's kind of like hard to see where some of these wins come from if some of these other teams are as improved as they've looked so far.
Well, okay. There's Temple, East Carolina, and UConn. They have, I would say UC's looked better than each of those teams the last 2 weeks. Like, at least you're not like East Carolina that, God, they're losing by, what, 30 to James Madison? A good James Madison team, but, I mean, they're still an FCS team. And then UConn, they can't put any points on the board. Temple looked god-awful. Like, I don't know. I mean, this team isn't going to win 10 games this year, which is fine. But it's like, I don't think they're a four-win team. Not yet. I guess we'll see what happens against Miami on Saturday, but...
I don't know. I just don't trust them to win on the road. Outside of East Carolina. I don't know. Like the way the offense looked, especially like in like coming off like how well the defense kept them in the game against Michigan. Which like they needed a couple of breaks to keep that game as close as it was. Like the special like Michigan's special teams was unbelievably terrible. And, like, their punt game gave UC their first touchdown. Like, the offense had one good drive against Michigan. Like, and I know it's Michigan. But going into Miami, I don't know. I'm not very confident about their chances of coming out of Miami with a win.
Okay. Are we jumping ahead to Miami already? Are we putting Michigan to bed?
Yeah, let's put Michigan to bed and move on to Miami.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. UC, for the first time, I don't even know when. I'm guessing, like, Roethlisberger's last year or the season after that. UC opens up as an underdog to Miami. 7.5 points. I think it's about down to, like, 5 now. But thoughts on that, Scott? Let's not even like going X's and O's. I mean, what the thoughts on the betting line and opening up as a touchdown underdog to your rival that you dominated for the last decade?
Yeah, I gotta admit, when that line came out, I was pretty surprised, like just to see them open up that big underdog to Miami. I don't know. It just seems kind of crazy. It's not like Miami has been like amazing or anything. Like, they lost a close game to Marshall, and then they beat Austin Peay pretty easily. But, man, like, you really don't expect, like, that type of thing where a team like you've dominated for so long is a touchdown favorite over you. And, like, the line really didn't even move that far down so far. Like you said, it's only, like, what, like a point and a half?
It's 5. It's 5 points.
I mean, get a point and a half lower than.
I mean, yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I mean, I think we talked about this back in August. If there was any time for Miami to rise up and break the losing streak, it's kind of this year. You know, UC's doing a complete rebuild with the coaching staff. The offense is dog shit. The defense coming into the season, we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, we found out that they're going to be pretty good. Miami, on the other hand, Chuck Martin has them rolling relatively. They got year two with him, so there's not much turnover there from a position or coaching standpoint. And they get UC at home at Yeager Stadium. That being said, UC's dominated this series. It seems like Fickell's actually going to take Miami seriously for once instead of just, you know, assuming it's just another road game like Tuberville did. And Yeager Stadium isn't exactly the most daunting environment that UC's going into. They've gone through Michigan. They're going into a stadium that, for the most of the time, is filled with UC fans as much, if not more, than Miami fans. It's going to be pretty much a neutral game environment. And yet they're still opening up as touchdown underdogs. Something's not right there. Like, what are we missing that Vegas is seeing?
I think it's just not a lot of confidence in UC being that good. I mean, that has to be it. That can only be the only reason why they're underdogs. They coming off a 4-win season last year. Like, Miami ended up making a bowl game. Like, getting blown out by Michigan. Like, looking terrible against Austin Peay. It kind of makes sense. But, like, it's not like Miami's been impressive either. So, I don't know. Like, I know, like, the lines are just, like, to get, like, equal action on each way. But it just seems kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I
it's
kind of
really odd. I mean,
expected
but
it to be like one or two, like UC's way, not like six Miami's way.
yeah, I mean, it in the NFL, right? When they run out lines, the home team automatically gets 3 points, right? I don't know if college is the same way, but I wonder if that's something similar that's happening here. Because on paper, Vegas sees, a 1-1 UC team who got, on paper blown out by Michigan. Even though I mean, the game we were watching the game, it was closer than that, is going on the road to a Miami team that's also 1-1, and in their mind, they're at the similar level, and they just give him an extra 3 points and then a couple of more points on top of that. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. I'm not afraid of Miami, I guess. They're 1-1, like you said. They lost a close game to Marshall. Really interesting, by the way, that UC and Miami both played Marshall and Austin Peay in the same season. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. They beat Austin Peay a little bit more handedly than UC did. But at the same time, I mean, look at the streak. I mean, the talent level on both teams, you'd have to say UC gets the edge, and they have the history behind them. I guess I don't understand that line. I was kind of going with you. I thought it'd be like even or maybe a UC favorite by a couple of points, but certainly not a touchdown underdog.
Yeah, it's like one of those things like where, I don't know, it just like shows where like the perception of the program is right now. And
Right.
it's not very high. Which is, I don't know, it's just kind of like unsettling a bit. And it's like an internet-only game too, which I know is like a separate issue. But like those kind of suck.
Is that even being like simulcast, like locally?
I think it is, like locally.
Okay. Like, what is it like? I don't know. What is even like the local like channel anymore? Like the CW Star 64, whatever the hell it is. With the janky like screen animations and stuff like that. I don't know. X's and O's wise, I mean, you probably have to say, I mean, okay, not probably. Miami definitely has the edge offensively, just because Cincinnati's offense is just such garbage this year. Gus Ragland, he looks fine this season. I mean, he has 5 touchdowns and one pick in 2 games. But I mean, 3 of those touchdowns came against Austin Peay, where he somehow threw for a worse completion percentage against Austin Peay, but still put up 3 touchdowns. Probably got more of it done on the ground against Austin Peay. So I mean, going into this game, if you're talking about like what you plan against, it's almost like you have to have the similar game plan as you had against like Austin Peay for Cincinnati. A quarterback that can probably get it done with his arm, but is probably more likely to get it done with his legs. I don't know. I mean, what do you think like game plan wise against Miami?
I think you just have to be prepared for them to try to run the ball. Because it seemed like most of Miami's success, but like the past few years, it's been like ball control, like run the ball, and then like throw deep. And that's kind of been their strategy this year. Like they've had a number of like long passes. And against Austin, and like their first 2 games, they've held the ball for like 34 and 35 minutes. Which,
Right.
that's like ball control like ultimately means nothing. But at the same time, like it does, like end up paying off when like your defense is on the field forever. Like Miami does have like some solid receivers, like who've had like they had a receiver who had a 100-yard game against Austin Peay. But like, nothing they do really scares you, like necessarily. Except like the fact that like, they've been pretty good on third down in both their games. And, well, I guess not against Austin Peay. They were only 5 of 14. But, like, they pit, like, half of them against Marshall, and they've held the ball a long time.
Right.
Which, like, we've seen the defense wear down, especially last season. It seemed like the defense would wear down by the end of the game. And it seems like Miami just had, at least against the Tuberville teams, they had a pretty solid game plan against UC.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they're going to lean on the running game. I mean, if you're Miami, I don't know how you don't feed Alonzo Smith and Kenny Young most of the way. The biggest receiving threat is James Gardner, who, like you said, I mean, he had a big game against Marshall this year. But he also had a pretty solid game against Austin Peay. He seems to be like their number one target. Last year, I think he only had, I don't know if he got in the end zone at all, but I think he had like 70, 80, 90 yards receiving. I mean, it was, you know, not overly impressive, but a solid game from a receiver. But I think you're right. I think it's the running game, which I want to say feeds into UC's favor. I want to say the front seven is more than capable of bottling up whatever Miami throws at them from a rushing perspective, especially now that they have a head coach and a coaching staff that actually knows what they're doing defensively. I don't know what that means at the end of the day. I mean, unfortunately, you got to score points to win, and I have no clue what the hell the offense is going to do on Saturday.
Now, that does make it like hard to predict these games, because we really don't know what the offense is going to be like from week to week.
Right.
Like, and this one included, like you would think they'd be able to make some plays on Miami. But at the same time, it's like they haven't made plays on anybody.
That's the thing, is like going into this game, I'm going into this season, I think all three of us, you know, thought that Ross Trail should be the starting quarterback. But due to injuries and just Hayden Moore looking better in practice, you know, they had to go to Moore. But Fickell said this week that Trail might get some run against Miami. Does that mean he starts? We don't know. Does that mean that Hayden Moore has a short leash and he'll get pulled if he throws, goddamn, another two pick sixes, or even more interceptions? I don't know. I want to say that if Ross Trail does play this game, UC has a slightly better chance, just because, God, I just don't know where Hayden Moore's going with the football on any given play. I mean, granted, he's not getting receiver help some of the time, but, I mean, like we talked about against Michigan, it's hit or miss whether or not he's actually going to hit an open receiver.
And, like, just looking through, like, some of Miami's, like, numbers, it's like their defense has been, like, pretty solid against the run and not that great against the pass. It's like, mm-hmm. There's, like, your opportunity to, like, make some big plays. And, like, unfortunately, it's like UC's pass defense is, like, ranks, or pass offense ranks, like, 119, like, which isn't, like, not great. And, like, they haven't really gotten any big plays in the passing game. Like, the longest pass went to Dokes against Michigan, and that wasn't even a long pass.
The screen, yeah, it was like a tunnel screen or a slip screen or something. Yeah, it wasn't even like that's not like a drop back, throw deep downfield kind of pass. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I'm saying UC's gonna win, just because if we're going historically, that's just what they've been doing. And even under the god-awful coaching staff that was, you know, the Tuberville era, that especially the past couple of years, this team somehow goes into Oxford and still wins. Like, they'll win 14-0 or 14-13, and we don't know how they'd pull it off. But for whatever reason, the fairy dust just goes UC's way. I don't know. What do you think?
I kind of think this is the year that the streak is going to end.
No. Stop saying that.
Miami's been up to play UC. I still kind of don't buy in that they take Miami seriously. And if it comes down to, like, special teams, which, like, it probably will, because neither one of us thinks it's going to be a high-scoring game. Like, do you really trust UC special teams to come through?
Which aspect of special teams? Like the punting game? I'll take the punting game. Like if it's one of those situations where it's like UC is up like 14-10 and they're giving Miami the chance for a game-winning drive and they need to pin them deep, I would be confident in that. If it's a situation where UC's down, you know, or tied, if it's like, let's say it's tied at 14 in the fourth quarter and you need Andrew Gantz or Josh Paisley to kick a game-winning field goal, not as confident. I don't know about that one. But, yeah, it's all situational, I guess.
Well, it seems like it's just, if it comes down to where, like, you need, like, Hayden Moore to lead you down the field again.
No.
We should touch on the kicking situation real quick. Since Andrew Gantz didn't play against Michigan, it was Josh Paisley. And, Luke Fickell just said, like, Gantz was kind of banged up. And, like, he just, like, straight up lost the job last week, which seemed to surprise a ton of people. Do you have any thoughts about that? Or do you just think they should just play who's ever better?
Well, I think, Fickell said that, Gantz is banged up. That was one of the reasons why he wasn't playing, which I believe him. I mean, Gantz has been kind of struggling with injuries the last couple of years. But, I mean, at the same time, he opened up the kicking competition this week. He flat out said, after Michigan and during his press conference this week, that the kicking game is wide open. I mean, whoever wins it during practice is going to win it during, you know, or is going to play during the week. And I would not be surprised if Josh Paisley just flat out won that kicking competition in practice. I mean, injuries or not, Josh Paisley just looked better in practice, and that's who they went with. And I'm fine with that option.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, if Andrew Gantz is going to kick, if Andrew Gantz is going to kick field goals and miss most of them, and not even make extra points, then why even have him out there?
Yeah. Yeah, because like the way he looked against Austin Peay was not good. Like I know Paisley like missed his kick against Michigan. That was a stupid kick. They shouldn't have even tried. But it's like his history last season. Like he was good on the short stuff, and like we know like kind of what he's gonna be. I doubt he got much more accurate from longer range. But yeah, it's like the kicking game. Like I don't think a ton of us thought it would be like a gigantic question mark for a second straight year. But if, like, Andrew Gantz isn't healthy, it's like another, like, senior year kicker, like, loses his job. Like, we just saw it with Miliano. And now it seems like it's happening with Gantz. Like, we're guys who had gigantic scoring outputs in, like, their, lower classmen years become upperclassmen and then lose their job. It's kind of weird.
I'm not sure what to make of that. I mean, it's I do think that injury plays a factor, but I mean, how unhealthy was Gantz in week one when he was missing a field goal and an extra point? I mean, who really knows? It's hard to tell exactly what is causing his issues, if it's the injuries or he's just got jitters or he's just not as good as he was. So you don't really know. It's kind of an interesting situation, especially like, you know, just systemically what you're talking about. Like, it's just happened for the last few years. Who knows what the factor is there? But, I mean, more broadly speaking, you have UC losing this game. Why?
I'm pinning it on the offense. I just don't think they're going to do enough to get it done. I think they're going to lose, like, I'd say, like, 20-17.
Okay. I think that's a perfectly appropriate. Like, I mean, I hate that you say that, but it's still, like, a pretty pragmatic prediction. I think this is one of those close games, too. Like, I think all, like, looking down the schedule, Navy, South Florida, and potentially Central Florida, they're not going to be close games. Like, I could see UC potentially getting blown out in those. And I mean, I don't mean like blown out to the extent of like, you know, 20-30 points, but like maybe a couple of touchdowns they lose by. This game, I think, is going to be another close one. I think it's going to be within a field goal. I'm going to go the flip. I'm going to say UC wins 20-17. But who the hell knows? I mean, like you said, it's Hayden Moore has trouble, you know, getting a play call change in from the sidelines with 11 seconds to go, and still doesn't know how to get it out to get it communicated to the rest of the players without getting a delay game. I mean, it's that little simple stuff that's still having a problem, that he still has a problem with. Even not even counting what happens after the ball is snapped. I mean, you just never know what this offense is going to do on a play-to-play basis. I still think UC has enough to pull it out. I mean, they had close games when the coaching staff was complete garbage. I mean, now they actually have a competent coaching staff that game plans well and, you know, keeps the players hyped during games and keeps them focused. I can't imagine they lose again. Or I can't imagine they lose this year. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be another close one, but I just don't see them losing this on Saturday.
I don't like want to pick them to lose, but I just can't. I don't know. I just don't trust them to win a road game yet. Like it's one of those things where they're going to have to prove to me that they can win on the road before I believe that they can win road games.
But it's not a road game, though. It's a neutral site, right?
It's still in Oxford. It's not like they're playing at Paul Brown Stadium. I mean, the last
we'll get to that in a second, but yeah, you're right. That's fine.
The last road game they won was over a year ago. It was like against Purdue, like one of the worst teams. Like they lost to pretty terrible teams on the road last year, like UConn.
Hey, they took mighty Tulsa to overtime last year. Let's not discount that. At Tulsa, yeah. I'll just drop that mic right there. You're right, though. I mean, like I said, your prediction is pragmatic. I think. It's going to be one of those annoying slogs of a game up until the fourth quarter, and then just depending what wonkiness happens from either Hayden Moore's arm or the defensive line strip sacking Gus Ragland or something. It's going to be decided in the fourth, and it's going to be close. And depending on what kind of wonky stuff happens there, we'll decide who's going to win that game. I just think UC has enough to pull it out, albeit a close win.
I think it's a game they should definitely win, but I don't know. I'm just not buying in Denbrock yet either.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I really don't.
Dan, like,
I don't know.
Too many of these are toss-up games. Like, really have a good, solid pick.
Right. I don't know. One thing's for sure, we'll learn more about this team this week. I think we've learned a lot about this team over the course of the season. I mean, we know the front seven is going to be the strength. We know Hayden Moore is still as iffy as ever at the quarterback position. Jared Doakes looks to be a star. Mike Boone is himself. They all, I mean, this team is who we thought they were. But the question is, like, to your point, can they win on the road? Can they show that they're not going to do stupid things week to week, like throw two pick sixes against the number 8 team in the country on the road? All that stuff kind of, you know, still remains to be seen. And I guess we'll hopefully learn about some of those things, you know, this week against Miami. A motivated Miami team as well. So, who knows?
It's something that they're going to definitely have to come out and just, like, punch Miami in the face and take it.
Oh, that's not going to happen. There's no way. There's no way they're going to come out and punch anything in the face with this offense. That's just not on the cards. I mean, hell, do you see Austin Peay? They were, what, like, tied at zero for the first quarter?
I think there's a chance that they could. But, yeah, it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be a weird game. It's just like, neither one of us thinks there's going to be a ton of scoring. Mm-hmm. Like, and when there's not a ton of points, it's like every literal thing matters. And, I don't know, like, we just haven't seen enough from Hayden Moore, especially on the road, to, like, really, like, know what kind of quarterback he is. And especially if they start playing, like, musical chairs at the quarterback position. Which, like, we both think would kind of be justified. But I think if you're going to make that move to Trail, I think you do it, like, next week. And just let Moore get through it.
Yeah, that does be kind of a good point. I mean, you're right. Like, all of us think that Ross Trail is the better long-term option at quarterback. But you don't want to ever do what the coaching staff last year did, was play three quarterbacks in the same game and really flip-flop play-to-play, drive-to-drive. That's just never – that never makes any sense offensively. I think – it kind of depends on kind of how this game goes. If it really starts to go south fast, like Hayden Moore's thrown a couple of interceptions in the first half, UC's down 21-3 at halftime. I wouldn't be shocked if they go to Trail, if the coaching staff thinks he's healthy enough to play. But you're right. Like, if it turns out that it's kind of still close going into, like, the fourth quarter, I wouldn't be surprised if they just wait until next week to make a decision.
Yeah. Like, that does change. Like, if you said, like, they go three and out, but it just looked terrible the entire first half. And then you make a switch at halftime.
I think that's not like musical chairs like we're talking about. That's just making a quarterback change. Like you're not gonna put Ross Trail in there for two or three series in the third quarter and then pull him. You know, you're gonna ride him for the rest of the game.
Yeah, which is something we saw a lot last year, especially
right.
with Trail,
which is something you want to avoid.
Yeah, where he would like come in and like do the one thing wrong and get pulled again.
Right. So you'd think that this coaching staff has enough sense about themselves to not do the illogical thing. Do you have anything else, like more specifically about kind of this specific Miami game, or should we kind of talk about the bigger news about the series in general?
Yeah, let's talk about the bigger news with the series in general.
Okay. So, good news, bad news situation. I think it's more positive news. I'd like to get your thoughts on that too, Scott. UC has extended their series with Miami through 2029. But it's going to be a little different. Three of the games will be played at Paul Brown Stadium. Five each, Hager and Nippert. Kind of an interesting like toggling of the series a little bit. I mean, what are your thoughts overall on the change? Kind of the extension and kind of the new format?
It definitely seems to be like a bit of a favor to UC. Like just because in the middle there, like between 2021 and 2023, like UC gets two home games sandwiched at a Paul Brown Stadium game. Which is like a nice like kind of little boost. Since like Miami,
right.
This game against Miami counts for the series. So really it's five games at UC, four at Miami, and three at Paul Brown Stadium. So like, I think that's kind of a nice little boost. And like I don't really understand the point of playing at Paul Brown Stadium, but I guess it's they want to do it.
Yeah, the thing from like Mike Bone's standpoint is he's hearing in one ear UC fans don't want to keep going up to Oxford every single year. On the other hand, he doesn't want to drop the game with Miami because, I mean, personally, the Miami series is a good thing for the for college football in general. It's good for Cincinnati. I think keeping the series with Miami in general makes sense. You have an automatic FBS team on the books. You have a motivated FBS team on the books. It's not just like you're pulling in, like, I don't know, like Troy or Arkansas State or something like that. Like, you get a good test early in the season to kind of test your mettle against before you go into AAC play. It's a rivalry game. I mean, those are dying by the wayside. I mean, it's not likely that the Keg and Nails game against Louisville is ever going to get picked up again. Who the hell knows? Maybe if the UC eventually gets into the AACC at some point, if ever. But the compromise that Mike Bone came up with makes a lot of sense and favors UC from a lot of standpoints. Like you said, they don't go to Miami for 3 years, between 2021 and 2023. UC doesn't go to Miami every other year, except once at the end of the series. They get three games at Paul Brown Stadium, which should be effective home games for the Bearcats. Miami effectively gets two of those. I mean, they get official home games for two of those, and UC gets one, but all three should get packed by Bearcats fans. So from a fan and environment standpoint, it should be like effective home games. And for the most part, I mean, this is a decent compromise. Keep the series on the books. Keep it one of the oldest rivalries in college football going. There's a lot to like about it.
It's like one of those series they definitely had to keep going. Like, I know people complain about the Miami game, but you can keep that as like your weakest non-conference game and just schedule three better non-conference games. That's not Miami's fault that UC decides to play like teams like Austin Peay and so on every year. But yeah, I don't really mind that much. Like, I just really don't understand the benefit of playing at Paul Brown Stadium in front of like maybe 2/3 of the crowd. Add a little pizzazz to
it. Well, that's the thing about Paul Brown Stadium is that it's not Jaeger Stadium, and that's kind of the point. It's like a compromise, right? Like, at least UC, for all intents and purposes, for the last 5 or 6 years at least, has packed Jaeger Stadium as much as, if not more than, the Miami game. Now they get they basically remove three of those games from the schedule, two or three of those games from the schedule, put them downtown where UC can actually pack the stadium more than their opponent and give themselves effective home games. It makes a lot of sense, I think.
Because they still play at Nippert pretty much every other year until the Paul Brown Stadium games are over with. So, I mean, it's not like you... Miami is the team that loses a home game with the renewal. So I don't think it's like that bad of a compromise. Especially, yeah. Like, taking out one trip to Nippert. Like, that's kind of nice, at least.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, yeah, you remove two trips to Jaeger, remove one trip to Nippert. You effectively change those two trips to Jaeger to home games. From an environment standpoint, from a fan standpoint, I don't know. I mean, you look at like some of these other like P5, this is obviously two teams that are in the group of five, but like, you know, TCU, SMU, a P5 and a group of five school, they play every other year. Colorado and Colorado State play every year. There's a precedent that's been set across college football to keep these kinds of close rivalries going. And UC's done that, and they've done it in a manner that favors them over the next decade and a half or so. I don't know. I feel like if you're trying to poke holes in this idea, there's just no talking sense with you.
Just like looking ahead at some of the future schedules, it really pays off in 2019, where you take out the game that would be at Jaeger Stadium if you switched every year. And that gives UC two home games, because they already are locked in to hosting UCLA to start the year. But then they go to Ohio State, and they're scheduled to return the game on Marshall in 2019. So you'd be looking at a non-conference schedule where you play three road games and one home game. And that had to be something that UC would definitely try to get out of. Like, you can't have five home games. And, like, they fixed that, got their sixth home game. Which, it's like, we know football's the moneymaker. And that had to be a big concern for them, and manipulating the series the way they did, especially.
Yeah, exactly. If you're looking at 2019 with three road games, then you have to go into the issue of, okay, who do you move? Do you try to move Ohio State somewhere? Maybe. Do you try to move Marshall somewhere? Maybe. But with this setup, now in 2019, you have four games against FBS programs. And, I mean, obviously no FCS opponents. I mean, that's a good thing. That's a great thing, in fact. And it just it gives you more flexibility going forward as well. So, yeah, lots of good positives about this.
Definitely, because you like that 2019 year, like you're kind of like locked in, because like it'd be Ohio State would be the one who would like kick the can for that game. Mm-hmm. Like you see when like toss away their buyout from the OSU game, and like you'd have to pay Marshall to move that game. And like going to Marshall seems to be like a pretty decent trip for everybody. Like in West Virginia, so like it's that far away.
Right.
And that'd be leaving you with like a pretty god-awful home slate. Like 2019, their conference home games are Tulsa, Temple, UConn, and UCF. So it's not like they're exactly would be bringing in top flight competition. So yeah, getting like, especially the Miami game always does well at Nippert. So like the Miami fans come up and it's like always a sellout, even if both teams are great.
Right. And then, I mean, if you look even further down the road, 2025, you have three home games. You know, Miami, at Nippert, Nebraska, and Boise State. Like, that's going to be one, I mean, shit, that's 8 years from now. But, I mean, that's one hell of a home slate. Who knows if Nebraska and Boise State are going to stay on that schedule. But, I mean, you've already got locked in, not locked in, but, I mean, you already have on paper three home games from a non-conference standpoint. So, at least seven for that year. So, yeah, I mean, lots of like about the Miami series. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I am too. And, like, that's one of those series that it just wouldn't make a ton of sense to end it.
But yeah, like it's not like UC, it's not like anyone's banging at the door to beg UC or, you know, beg UC to have the honor of coming into Nippert Stadium. I mean, it's either you drop Miami from the series and you're fighting with, you know, you're trying to pay FBS or FCS schools to come in, and oh, Lord knows how awful it was when UC had two FCS opponents on the schedule a couple of years ago. I mean, that's the kind of situation you're looking at going forward. Scheduling in college football is becoming tighter and tighter and tighter, especially with the Power 5 schools like the Big 12 going to nine conference games, leaving only three open slots. It's hard to schedule in college football. It's not like college basketball where everyone wants to play everybody. It's hard in college football. And this locking in FBS teams onto your schedule, especially solid programs like Miami is a good thing.
And it's even harder when some of the big leagues have like scheduling mandates. Like we know the Big 12
right.
and the Big 10, like both do, like they have to play like major out of conference competition. And so, like, that really kills down one of your games right there. And they did end up with, like, Nebraska out of the whole mess. So, I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
Right. I mean, even you look at, like, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, Louisville won't play Cincinnati anymore is because they have a priority rivalry game against Kentucky every year. And then I'm sure they want to get an FCS school on the schedule or some kind of like cupcake to kind of warm up the season with. And then that only leaves one slot for Cincinnati, one or two slots for Cincinnati. I'm sure they don't want to spend those on UC when they can go out and probably get like a solid, you know, Big Ten program, like a, you know, to come through there or a Big 12 or something like that. Like it's just harder and harder and harder to schedule P5 programs when you're not in the P5.
Especially in a situation like that where, like, just, like, using Louisville for an example, where, like, you have a, like, they're already slated into, like, road games, non-conference road games against Kentucky, like, every other year. And, like, they're not going to want to put themselves in a situation where, like, once every year they're going on the road to play a non-conference game.
Right.
Which I guess is like kind like of like fortunate for UC, but like that's just how things work.
That's just how it works. I mean, there's only 12 games a year that these teams can schedule. The Big 12 only wants to schedule 3 out-of-conference games. They themselves are already behind the eight ball because they don't have a conference championship. They don't have that opportunity to, you know, make an impact on the college football playoff, except during the regular season. So they want to make sure that they're getting as many quality Power 5 opponents as they possibly can. And for like a Louisville standpoint, I mean, they've got a game locked in against Kentucky every year, so that's one. They're going to want to try to get a cupcake each year. So like this year they have Kent State and Murray State, so that's 3. And then they want another Power 5 opponent, and this year happens to be Purdue. And it just is what it is. I mean, UC is just the odd man out. Oh, and by the way, Louisville has to play, you know, Clemson, Florida State, et cetera, like every single year. So it's not like they want to, like, you know, load up their schedule as much as they possibly can from an out-of-conference standpoint. They've got enough problems to deal with in the ACC. So.
Yeah, and, like, it's just where it sucks even more, just not having, like, any in-conference rival. Where
right.
You just, like, have to search for something.
Right.
And it's Miami, for better or worse. Do you have anything else you want to get to before we run through the AAC?
No, I think I'm good. I mean, I guess, you know, quick hits on the basketball side. You know, UC picked up a commitment from four-star point guard from LA. I think LA, Logan Johnson, yesterday. That was pretty exciting. The full AAC schedule was released this morning. I haven't looked at it, but I'm, you know, we kind of already know what's kind of going on there from like some of the big hitters. I'm okay to move on to the AAC football schedule. What about you, Scott?
They did put out the basketball schedule. We can go through that real quick as I open it here.
Yeah, let me quickly Google that.
Yeah, this awesome part of the podcast where we both look up the schedule.
No, this is great radio. This is ideal.
One interesting bit of news we did find out, like the annual exhibition game with Bellarmine, they got renewed. And they got like a special exemption to play a road game against Bellarmine. Because that game's in Freedom Hall, which is in Louisville, which is kind of a weird thing to do. But I guess it's kind of cool that like Mick and Scotty Davenport, who's Bellarmine's coach, and they were both assistants under Patino, like they continue playing each other. That's a pretty good deal. It's kind of nice to see that they kept that going.
Yeah, you'd think if UC wasn't playing at Northern Kentucky's arena, they probably would have had that at home game. But it is kind of cool that they're going to go down to Louisville and play, you know, what is effectively a pro stadium down there and have a nice exhibition game. It should be a pretty cool experience for both teams.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, it's something that they like to do anyway. That's so.
Right.
We already knew, like, some of the non-conference things, like, pretty much for the schedule, so we can skip that. The conference play opens against Memphis. They go to Temple early in the conference schedule, like, yet again. Every single time, they go to Temple early. Then they play SMU very early. They play them the third game of the conference slate. Of course, they play UConn twice, starting in February, because always UConn in February. They don't play Wichita State until February 18th, and then March 4th. So, if like the should be the two best teams in the league, and they play like two of their last five games against Wichita State. So we'll really
find out that's really weird.
Who's going to be the conference champion as the AAC backloads their schedule like completely?
Yeah, it's weird. They play SMU. They play SMU, like, in January, and then again a month later. They play UConn in February, and then again 3 weeks later. And then Wichita State is it's like, to your point, like, there's 2 or 3 weeks in between that those games at the end of the season. I mean, they're definitely, like, loading it up, so the top few teams in the conference are you know, the marquee games at the end of the year, and then those games at the end of the year determine seeding in the tournament, so there's, you know, those extra implications on top of it, especially as you're heading into March Madness and that seeding. It kind of sucks that, you know, you're playing at Tulane and at Wichita State to end the year. I don't know, from a scheduling standpoint, it's I'm fine with most of it. I mean, I don't really have any, like, I don't have major beat. Like, it's not like, I don't see any major stretches in the conference schedule where it's like, yeah, that's going to be a gauntlet.
Yeah, it does come down to the wire, though. Like, in February, you play 5 road games, 4 home games, and your road games are at UConn, at SMU, at Houston, at Tulane, at Wichita State. And, like, out of those 4, you expect Tulane should be, like, a layup. Like, you get, like, your
right.
your four toughest road games or your last 4, like, road games, which is, like, kind of shitty. But, like, yeah, a definitely front-loaded conference schedule. Like, Memphis at Temple, SMU, like, the big early season home game, at USF, at UCF, at ECU, Temple, at Memphis. Like, those should all be wins. So you should be off to a pretty solid conference start.
Right.
And then, like, you get Houston, then, like, it... Even, like, Houston, they play January 31st and February 15th. Like, just 2 weeks apart. Like, just kind of a incredibly backloaded slate.
Yeah, interesting also from, like, a TV coverage standpoint, there are a ton of games on, like, ESPN and ESPN2. And, like, not just, like, your games on, like, a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night where you pretty much have that block, you know, to yourself anyways. But, like, SMU is on ESPN2 on a Sunday at 6. You've got UConn on a Saturday at noon on ESPN or ESPN2. You've got SMU on the road on a Sunday at 4 o'clock. You've got Wichita State at home on a Sunday at 4 o'clock. Your last game of the season is at Wichita State on Sunday at CBS at noon. Lots of good marquee games from, like, an ESPN standpoint on the weekends. Like, I feel like is that more than normal? Like, it seems like, I mean, normally there's a lot of them, like, floating around from, like during the week, but, like, the weekend ESPN, ESPN2 games, it seems like they loaded up on that this year.
It does, like, both UConn games, as you mentioned, like, on ESPN. Wichita State, like, obviously on ESPN. Like, the SMU, like, road game has been a pretty big deal. But the SMU home game, you mentioned that. That's on 6 o'clock on a Sunday night, which is, like, the opening round of the NFL playoffs. So it gets that death slot across from the playoff game. So, like, that aspect, that's kind of shitty. But you can't really complain too much about, like, you end up with a lot of games on TV. And then, like, all the pretty much
right.
the garbage games that are on CBS Sports Network or ESPN News, like you would expect. But then, like, coming down the stretch, like, the only games you have on CBS Sports are, like, UCF and Houston and Tulsa. So you should get a lot of national exposure for a team that's in the top 20. Coming down the stretch.
Yeah, for my perspective with a kid who still is working his way through sleeping at night and gets me up at 5 a.m., there's not a lot of games that are, you know, that unreasonably late. You know, Temple at home, you have CBS Sportsnet at 9 p.m. I'm not going to watch that anyways because I'm a cord cutter and CBS Sportsnet has archaic technology that they somehow can't translate into online streaming. At Tulane, at the end of the season, is on ESPN2 at 9 p.m. And that one might be able to watch, but, I mean, those are your only 2 really late games. I mean, potentially Temple on January 4th It's either slotted for 7 or 9 o'clock. Hopefully that's a 7 o'clock start. But, you know, for the most part, like, not unreasonable games from, like, a timing standpoint either.
That's actually a pretty interesting point. Like, a lot of early games this year. It's just kind of interesting. Interesting twists.
I feel like last year it was just, like, I feel like I didn't watch, like, nearly half as many games as I usually did. I mean, part of it was, like, even at that point, like, like, my kid was definitely not sleeping through the night. But, I mean, let's see, Iowa State last year, 9 p.m., Temple last year, 9 p.m., Houston was 9 p.m., SMU, 9 p.m., Tulsa, 9 p.m., Central Florida, 9 p.m.
UCLA game will probably be a late game. Like, they have the only two games they haven't announced tip times for were Florida and UCLA. So Florida, like, has potential to be a late game. But like you said, like, only three announced, or two confirmed 9 p.m. tip-offs with one that's a swing game. So if you hate
Stanford, right, and that's the thing, is like,
perfect.
Yeah, well, that's me. I mean, I'm just like, I'm going to, like, play the old guy card now. I mean, even the UCLA game, that even if that's, like, a 9 p.m. tip, I mean, that's on the Saturday. Like, I don't care about that. It's, like, the ones that, like, kill me are, like, the Tuesday 9 p.m. game at Tulane. Like, I don't want to watch that game. Like, who wants to watch that game? I mean, that's what killed me last year, was, like, the weeknight 9 p.m. games against, like, I don't know, Tulsa on the road. Like, I don't want to watch that. So,
and UCLA, like, yeah, there's better. A pretty good chance that will be it could be a day game too. We don't really know. They haven't announced what TV that's going to be on. If it's on like a ESPN or like a CBS, if it's on CBS, it's definitely a day game. But if it's on ESPN or like the Pac-12 network, for some reason, like, it would be a night game. That won't be too bad. Like, you can deal with one of those. Especially when it's a true road game on the West Coast.
And especially when it's like, it's not like, I mean, that's a marquee game. Like, I mean, everyone's going to, I'll stay up to watch that game. Like, I don't care what time it's at. I mean, it's UCLA on the road. I mean, how often do you get to play that game?
I think the interesting thing is the Xavier game, like, Saturday at noon. Like, let's see, it just seems weird. Get used to the primetime shootouts.
Yeah, and it's, like, buried on FS1, so, like, 14 people in the country can watch that. Like, my only reason to ever download the Fox Sports app is that specific game. Like, I don't think I've ever opened the app other than the road game against Xavier, and that's it.
Which, it's like what happening at the end of football season, so that's the reason they can't be on Fox. Just kind of a letdown.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Otherwise, I mean, overall, solid schedule. I mean, there's not like any standouts where you're like, oh yeah, I'm really you know peeved about that. I mean, for the most part, it's an okay schedule. It doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
It's like, you definitely thought it'd be backloaded, and it is. It's kind of a little more backloaded than even I expected. Because you wouldn't expect to get, like, Wichita, like, your first game with them in the middle of February. I thought they would, like, space it out a little bit more, kind of like they did last year. Like, instead, like, you get SMU really quick, and then you get, like, a bunch of just the random teams. I guess whatever the hell Temple is. Like, part, like, 7. Yeah, just kind of.
And I guess from, like, an overall standpoint, it's backloaded from the AAC perspective. But, I mean, UC has a gauntlet in December, which we kind of already knew about. I mean, Xavier on December 2nd, a week later against Florida in Newark. And then a week after that, you have, you know, UCLA on the road. I mean, that's going to be a tough, like, few games. I mean, hopefully UC goes 3-0 during that stretch. I guess you just never know. But then they have, like, a little bit of a break, and then their AAC schedule kind of starts off really not too bad. I'm on the road and SMU at home. You got kind of, like, you're able to kind of, like, recover a little bit from the Xavier, Florida, UCLA stretch. and then, you know, kind of ease your way into AAC season, you know, nicely. I think that's kind of nice. Like, it would be torture if we had to go off of UCLA and then, you know, 2 weeks later start against SMU on the road and Wichita State on the road as an extreme example.
You did mention the Mississippi State game, a kind of interesting game against them that you play at home. Like,
I just assume because it's a home game, it's not going to be that big of a deal. Like, it is. It's Mississippi State. It's Mississippi State and everything. Like, I don't know. I'm not as worried about home games here, even though it's being played in Kentucky.
I mean, that just adds like another tough game to that stretch, where you play every name opponent in a row in your non-conference in the span of like 14 days.
Hey, they could potentially play South Dakota State on November 22nd. Let's not forget about that.
How could you forget about mighty South Dakota State?
The mighty, what do they call it? I think they're like the Rabbits or something? Jackrabbits?
Oh, yeah, the Jackrabbits. Like, with bringing Nate Walters back.
The mighty Jackrabbits. Which is spelled with one word? I thought Jackrabbits was two words. Anywho. But seriously, I mean, they do have, like, Iowa. If UC and Iowa, you know, go the projected trajectories, they've got Iowa on the 22nd of November, and then, you know, they get a break against Alabama State, and then they go right into that gauntlet in December, which should be good. At least make for good TV. Except for, you know, obviously, Crashdown Shootout, which, you know, only 14 people can watch. But other than that.
Because, like, yeah, we didn't mention the Cayman Classic, where you play Buffalo, then like a kind of interesting Richmond or UAB game, then probably Iowa. So yeah, like throwing in the championship game, and then like you're a little four-game gauntlet. Like the season full of early season, then late season gauntlets.
Right.
Do you want to run through the AAC and give our picks for this week real fast before we wrap this up?
Yeah, that works. We're going to get a little sidetracked there by hoops, but yeah, that's to be expected. So yeah, let's go through it.
Last week, real quick, Memphis UCF canceled, ruined our analysis of that game, which was amazing analysis. East Carolina blown out at West Virginia. Navy survived an interesting Tulane team. Temple needed a late field goal to beat Villanova. Tulsa won a shootout against Louisiana Lafayette. SMU won a shootout against North Texas. Houston beat Arizona. Kyle Allen looked like pretty all right. And South Florida and UConn didn't play. So, like, no gigantic surprises there, really. Like, now it makes for an interesting week in the AAC. So, we'll start with today. South Florida plays Illinois. What are you thinking about that one? Do you think USF gets gets their first real big, like, marquee win? It is an ESPN game.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're 17-point favorites. There's not really anything that tells us that, you know, South Florida can really lose that game. I mean, Illinois has beaten a Ball State team by 3. They beat Western Kentucky by 2.5 touchdowns. Or 2 touchdowns. I don't know. USF just looks better. I mean, they're 17-point favorites for a reason. I don't think there's any reason why South Florida loses that game unless, like, you know, the Irma thing is going to have a giant, like, give them a giant hangover. Because who knows how the hell they, like, prepared for this game.
Yeah, really. Yep, they should win and look good. The other Friday night game tonight, Temple, UMass, is there a single chance you'll watch a second of that game?
I mean, there's always a chance, right? let's see, it's on ESPNU, so I mean, I guess if Illinois South Florida is somehow boring and, I don't know, I got nothing else going on tonight, yeah, sure. If I break my leg on the way home and somehow ESPN gets, like, that South Florida game gets canceled by thunderstorms or something and there's nothing else on TV, yeah, I'll watch Temple UMass. If for only that, you know, Temple, there's a potential chance that they lose because Temple is actually not very good this year.
They are
shockingly.
They are 15-point favorites, so UMass must be very bad.
Right.
If you're in the Philadelphia area, tickets available from $6, so head on out.
Right.
I guess the marquee game of the conference slate this week, outside of UC's game, is UCLA goes to Memphis. It's a noon game on ABC. They're kind of interesting. Like Memphis, only a 3-point underdog to UCLA. Like, do you think Memphis has a chance for the upset, or do you think it's just going to be UCLA pulling away?
I don't ever doubt Memphis. I mean, the way UCLA just looked like complete garbage against Texas A&M in week one, and somehow managed to win that game and then blew out Hawaii last week at home. It's almost like a trap game for UCLA. Their game is at noon in Memphis. I don't know. I could see Memphis winning that game just because I have no clue what either team's going to bring to the table. Yeah, over under is 73. I didn't know both teams had that much offense. I knew UCLA had that much offense, but I didn't think Memphis had that much offense.
I think it's more an indictment on UCLA's defense.
Okay, good call.
I think Memphis has a chance. Like, they ran the ball well in their only game. I guess I'll have to do that again.
Right.
And West Coast team coming to play an East Coast game at noon. It's always the upset chance. I think UCLA is going to win, though. Another unwatchable game is UConn at Virginia. Is there any way you would turn on ESPN2 to watch that game?
How is that game slotted for ESPN2? There must be nothing on at noon on ESPN.
I think it's because ESPN2.
What else is on?
I think it's because the hurricane made them change the schedule, and that game ended up on TV. Florida State, like Miami, and some of the other games all got canceled or moved.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. Yeah, I mean, like, yeesh.
Yeah, but that
I guess you, okay, so you have Oklahoma State Pitt on ESPN, UCLA Memphis on ABC. Yeesh, there's, like, really not much else to watch at noon. Duke and Baylor, that's on ACC Network. Yeah, yikes, there's, like, nothing else on at noon. I guess next best game is, like, maybe Kansas and Ohio?
Oh, no.
Maybe Louisiana Lafayette and Texas A&M just to see if there's another nail that can be put in Kevin Sumlin's coffin. But that's on the SEC Network. Yeah, there's really not much else to watch. Oh. Okay, that makes sense now.
I didn't realize it was such a dire noon slate.
It really is pretty awful.
I guess it's a good Saturday to sleep in or do some yard work before the good games start.
Yeah, definitely. Once, like, 3:30 starts, oh, man, does it ramp up. Wisconsin, BYU at BYU, which, you know, they're feisty. Tennessee and Florida at 3:30. SMU, TCU at 3:30. Yeah, there's some good games that kick off at 3:30.
Yeah. SMU, TCU, good thing you mentioned that one. SMU, a 20-point underdog. Do you think there's a chance that they cover the spread? Because I don't think either one of us thinks they'll beat TCU.
I think SMU has a shot. I mean, SMU leads the offense to keep up. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past, like, I mean, I don't think TCU covers. I wouldn't be surprised if a few things go SMU's way and they win that game. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll kind of find out how plucky they are if they can go to TCU and somehow take that one down.
Right.
I don't have a lot of faith in them, though.
I mean, yeah, I don't think, okay, so if I would put money on SMU to win that game, I would put money on you to beat the spread.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think they'll cover it.
Yeah. Or whatever the terminology is, I have no idea. I obviously don't gamble.
East Carolina plays Virginia Tech. It'll go better for East Carolina where they're not down 42-14 at halftime. Or are they just that bad?
I don't understand how Vegas, like, Vegas has not learned from last week. What was the spread last week against West Virginia? It was like, or like the, I think it was what, like 60-something points? The over-under was 70. And, no, I guess they won by 76, or it was 76 total points. But West Virginia was only a 25-point favorite, and they won 36. This week, Virginia Tech, on the road, mind you, is a 22-point favorite, and the over-under 60. I don't understand how I don't see how Virginia Tech doesn't win by, like, 30 or 40, and both teams score, like, 80 points. East Carolina is awful. They are just so bad. And they fired their defensive coordinator for, wait for it, Robert Prunty. And he was just dog shit here. So how the hell do they expect to, like, even, like, keep that game close?
That's a really good question. Firing your defensive coordinator two games into the season takes some balls.
Kind of warranted? I mean, kind of?
Speaking of hard to keep it close, Tulane goes to Oklahoma. Do they have a... The spread is 35.5. Do they have any prayer?
Tulane's feisty, though. Like, they don't have a prayer, but they are feisty. Like, I would put money on Tulane to kind of keep that close just because of that option offense. Like, I would bet the under, and I would bet for Tulane to beat that spread. I mean, 35 points is a lot for Oklahoma, even like an Oklahoma team to cover. And Tulane, just from their possession offense, I wouldn't be surprised if they grind it down to where, you know, Oklahoma is only winning, I mean, only winning by like 20 or 25, just because they just don't have enough time.
That's interesting.
Like, Tulane is, like, not bad this year. Like, they're going to win some games. I hate that I have to say that, but they aren't bad.
Yeah. It's going to be a really tough game. I'm kind of interested to see if they can hang in for at least a little bit against OU.
Yeah.
Interesting game of the week, I guess. Tulsa goes to Toledo. Tulsa's an 8-point underdog. They struggled last week against whoever they played. Toledo seems to be, like, outside of Boise and USF, like that group of five challenger. It's like, do you think Toledo, like, proves their worth, or does Tulsa pull off an upset?
Yeah, I think Toledo's probably going to win. Like, the one thing about Toledo is that they're always reliable to be, you know, the representative from the MAC to win the championship and then, like, fight for that, you know, Power Five or whatever, the Access Bowl spot. I mean, especially when they're at home, and it's going to be a shootout. Like, you don't play Toledo in shootouts. Just don't do that. Like, Toledo always wins shootouts. You know, asterisks, you know, almost always win. But I mean, like, Toledo, I mean, I don't know. I don't put it against them to win that game. Or to lose. I don't put it against them to lose that game. I don't think Tulsa's going to win.
I don't either. I don't think Tulsa's that good this year. Yeah. Rounding out, Houston plays Rice in, like, I guess their home opener. Do you think Houston takes it down there? 22.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was wrong about Houston last week. Houston is good again on defense. Their offense is solid. I don't see any reason why Houston doesn't just steamroll Rice from the get-go.
Does Ed Oliver have another monster game?
Probably. Because it's Rice, and I mean, if I know anything about Rice, it which is nothing, they're going to get steamrolled.
I think that's the Rice analysis that there is.
It's the only one, because who the hell covers Rice?
I don't actually know.
Yep.
Do you have anything to add before we sign off this week?
not a whole lot. Hopefully UC does not, you know, shit the bed against a rival and let Miami break the streak. I still say UC wins. 2017. Signed, sealed, delivered.
Oh, so we both picked the same score, just the other way.
Right.
So one of us is going to be right. I hope it's you and not me.
Yeah, I know. I'm more optimistic than you this week, but I don't fault you at all for having that prediction.
And hopefully,
like we beat to death earlier. I mean, you just never know what you're going to get out of Hayden Moore in this offense week to week. You can always rely on the defense to, you know, play their part, but on a week to week basis, who knows how many pick sixes he's going to throw, and how many drops the receivers are going to have in the end zone. You just never know.
Hopefully they end up ringing the bell once again. And as always, go Bearcats.